Hello everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to the year 2012. Wherever that is in infinity. It's an interesting thing that we simply start counting the years without really having a clue as to how long existence has been existing. I hope that the year 2012 brings you nothing but good things. However, I know that it won't, because existence has never brought anybody just good things. It's very early in the morning here, as you can probably tell by the sound of my voice. As always, I want to thank everyone who has logged on to the website. Thank you to everyone who has supported the website in some way with your questions or comments of appreciation. And thank you to those who have sent in donations. As always, thank you to Marcus Fellows for establishing this website and for posting these talks once a month. Only two people have written in this month, and I'm not sure if that's a sign that people feel they've heard everything that I have to offer regarding this, that they really begin to understand what my response is going to be to any question that's asked. Someone last month commented that because my response is so clear, at some point people are going to run out of questions. And that's not such a bad thing. In fact, that's one of the main aspects of a non-dual perspective, is that at a certain point, questions become irrelevant. In any event, there is always only a totally inexplicable happening presenting itself. That's the happening of this moment. We don't exist as anything apart from that totally inexplicable happening, so we too are a totally inexplicable happening, simply being presented. In whatever way we're presented, one of the perhaps most difficult aspects of a non-dual perspective, if someone is really drawn to this perspective, at some point the realization comes that it's not offering us any particular outcome. It's not telling us that if we see life in this way, life will always be calm and cool and objective and peaceful. And however, it is ultimately saying that no matter what occurs, underlying all of that, there will be a sense that it's okay, because this is simply what life is, this is simply what life offers, and that we don't get to choose what life is going to offer us. So, as I said, only two people have written in this month, and we'll get down to those questions. The first one reads, "Hi Daryl, thanks for taking the time to answer my last question a few months ago. Your untangling of the issues has given my mind a bit of a rest from endless circles of thought. I had a question this month about Immanuel Kant. Now Kant, argued that there were 12 concepts, including unity, substance, necessity, causality, and others, which were necessary for experience. He argued that we do not have any experience, in quotation marks, without them. These concepts are part of the structure of the mind. Every perceptual experience we have is completely shot through with these concepts. It is not that our experience is made up of two things, sensation and concepts. He is arguing that there is no such thing as pure sensation for us. So we don't have a confused buzz, we have only an experience of objects. Experience for Kant is always conceptualized, and all experience is conceptualized as experience of objects. So if we try to think of how things are, how reality is, independently of these concepts, we find we cannot. We cannot know that reality is completely independent of how we think about reality, which is in terms of objects. Yes, there is something which exists independently of our minds, according to Kant, the something which produces experiences, but we cannot know anything about this something. Kant argues that our experience must be the way it is. There is no alternative to experiencing the world as a world of objects. So there is no alternative way of experiencing the world as it is. Any alternative wouldn't be experience at all. So I wondered, Darrell, what you thought of Kant's position. Presumably a non-dual state does not mean that you are no longer perceiving tables, chairs, human beings, etc. Presumably those concepts are still occurring. Kant would say that those concepts have to occur in order for there to be any experience at all. Would you agree with that? An adult in a non-dual state presumably does not perceive the world as a baby would do, as a buzzing event with no identifiable objects. But you would probably argue that there is no such thing as a non-dual state. All states are non-dual. I wonder if your position, for want of a better word, is that of being able to play with concepts of objects, because you know that those objects do not really exist, and not to attach to definitions of form, because you know they are not the reality. But the reality of the world is ungraspable, even though we cannot help but conceptualize. Kant said that the noumenal world, the real world, beyond our concepts of it, may well exist, but we cannot grasp it. Would you say that the noumenal world and the phenomenal world, the world that we experience with all of our constructs and concepts, are one and the same? Sorry, my questions are probably not very well laid out here, but if you could have a bash at answering some of them, that would be great. I've recently started doing a bit of philosophy tutoring, so it's important that I clarify some of this stuff myself, and a bit of help from you could be useful. Have a great Christmas. Thanks. All right. Immanuel Kant. In general, I would agree with what's being presented here. I don't really know a lot about Immanuel Kant and his position on existence. But what's presented here is would generally fall in line with what I'm presenting, although there are a few points that I would probably differ on, but they're really not that important. I mean, basically, Immanuel Kant is saying that there's no way that we can move away from experiencing the world as apparent objects. And I would agree with that. It's not really necessary that we move away from the usual experiences of life. As far as a non-dual sensibility goes, if we really simply examine more closely what our usual experience is, we come to realize that what appears to be true according to our experience, can't actually be true according to our experience. And so what happens is that our usual views of existence are denied by other views of existence that we have, a sense of existence that somehow is more real, an experience of existence that feels more real. So to make this very specific, we see the world in terms of form. So we see apparent forms. We see trees and houses, and we see bodies and cars, and we see all kinds of forms, snowflakes, and we identify obvious forms, such as the ones I just listed, or we identify certain nebulous forms, like emotions or thoughts, apparent forms that don't seem to be quite as solid and stable as a house or a car. And yet, once we've apparently lived life for a certain amount of time, we will begin to say that everything is changing. So it doesn't matter if it's a house or a car or a thought or a mood. We eventually have the impression that everything is changing. We have the impression that the planet is changing, that the galaxy is changing. If we were interested in studying the universe, we discover that the universe is changing. We discover that new stars are forming. We discover that there are galaxies that are blipping out of existence. So without leaving our usual impression of existence, that it is made up of forms, we also have a more fundamental impression of existence, that all of these forms are changing. And that leaves us with a contradiction. Because if everything appears to have form, and yet we have more of a fundamental feeling that everything is changing, and even the things that seem to be so solid and stable and secure, such as the planet or the galaxy or the universe, even those apparent forms are changing from moment to moment. So scientists will tell us that over the course of 7 years, every cell in our body dies, and each one of those cells is replaced by another cell. And yet it's not replaced by exactly the same cell, because obviously we're growing older, so there's some other change occurring there. So even in this body, which seems to be a nice solid little lump, in some cases some of us have more of a lumpish form than others, even in this apparently solid lump of a body, everything is moving and shifting and changing from moment to moment. All the cells are replacing each other. If we sit down and we do absolutely nothing and we begin to acknowledge the legitimate experience of the body, what we find is breath coming and going, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, all of this moving and shifting and changing, pulsation, vibration, thoughts arising and fading away, sounds arising and fading away. If we have our eyes open, the scene, the visual sense is shifting in some way. In general, we have the feeling that it's due to the movement of the head or the eyes, but the fact is that it's changing in subtle ways all the time. And in some cases, it's not so subtle. The movement of thought is fleeting. And you try to simply let a thought sit there in your head. I mean, make no attempt to hang on to something, but just let thought express itself the way it expresses itself, and you can't find anything solid and stable. It's just a moving, shifting dance, like the dance of smoke. And ultimately, a mountain is that same kind of dance, but it's just dancing very slowly. From moment to moment, a mountain is shifting in subtle ways, but over time, a mountain will become a hill and then will gradually become flat land. It takes quite a bit of apparent time for that to occur, but we all have that sense that everything is changing. If we don't, in this moment, have that sense that everything is changing, if we simply start to investigate our experience of life, we will come to realize that everything is changing. If we start asking, is that true? And so what we have here is this situation where, yes, existence always appears to have form of some kind, and yet we have a more fundamental sense that all of those forms are changing from moment to moment. So, you know, if I had a picture of 100 butterflies, and in one moment I erased one of the butterflies, it wouldn't be the same picture. And in the next moment I erased another one of the butterflies, it wouldn't be the same picture. And so it is with our bodies, or the planet, or the universe. That with these subtle changes, it's never the same from moment to moment. There's always some shift. So, yes, ultimately from a non-dual perspective, you don't leave the impression that existence has form. You just stop believing that appearance, and you have a more fundamental impression that it is a moving, shifting, dancing event. And in that shift, you're no longer dealing with things, these apparent forms. That's not what you're fundamentally dealing with. That's not what we're fundamentally experiencing here. The impression arises that what's fundamentally being experienced here, or what's fundamentally happening here, is simply an event that has no form. So it's a dance, it's an action, it's a shifting, it's fleeting. Although some of its fleeting quality is very slowly fleeting. So a mountain is a fleeting event. But that general shape of the mountain is not a relatively fleeting event. It seems like it's a long-term event. However, from moment to moment, if we really became an expert in mountains, we would find that they're either growing a little bit each year, or they're shrinking a little bit each year. And in each moment, certain portions of that mountain are falling away. They're being worn away. So it's always a different mountain from moment to moment. So within this non-dual perspective, it's not that we're going to one day all of a sudden have all the forms melt away so that we never ever see a form, or that we're never ever able to identify a form. What happens is, more basically, just as this person has stated, we begin to play with the idea of form. That yes, there are apparent forms, and we have labels for those forms. So we can talk about chairs, and we can talk about houses, and we can talk about movies, and we can talk about people, and we can talk about thoughts, and we can talk about consciousness, even though these labels don't really mean anything. That when this event first presented itself, nobody had any label for it. Those labels are apparently imposed upon the event after it arises. And they're basically just meaningless sounds pointing to these apparent forms. And then once any of us have experienced life to any degree, we eventually start saying that every one of these forms is changing. So once we start seeing that we're dealing with only apparent forms, or we have the impression that we're dealing with only the appearance of forms and sounds that fundamentally don't really explain anything, then we can start playing with them. We start using them in ways that are practical. But the impression that those names and those forms are describing some fundamental reality, that impression falls away. And we're left with a totally mysterious dance. It's not that we're left with the certainty of what life is. It's that we're left in total puzzlement. We don't know what any of this is. It seems to be form, but our experience tells us that it can't actually be form. Yet it still appears to be form. And the only thing we have to explain any of this is a bunch of sounds that don't really mean anything. They only take on meaning when they point to these apparent forms. So we have sounds that don't really mean anything, pointing to forms that give the impression they don't actually really exist. They're not, that the notion of form is not the fundamental reality. So we're left in total puzzlement. And more than that, it becomes obvious that we're not doing any of it, because try as we might to stop this changing, we can't. And try as we might to ultimately direct this changing, we can't. It moves in whatever way it moves. So we end up with these impressions, we end up with what the great spiritual teachings have been trying to explain for apparently thousands of years, that there is only a great spirit, a totally unexplainable presence, and by great spirit, just a moving, shifting presence, moving and shifting all on its own, doing what it does. That's all there is. Or if you want to call it the ocean of existence, the unformed ocean of existence. So if you're a Christian, you can say it's the great spirit doing whatever it does. That's what the explanation of God is in the Bible. If you're an Advaitist, you could say there is only the unformed ocean of existence. If you're a Taoist, you could say there's only the river of life, the flow, the current. If you're a physicist, you could say, or if you're a quantum physicist, you could say, there is only process. There are no things. There is just process. Now, where I might differ with Kant is that he's supposing that there may be some reality that is somehow opposed to what we experience in this moment. But from a non-dual perspective, that's really irrelevant. What happens is that our ability to define existence in any way falls away. The ability to define existence in any kind of legitimate way, so that we can play with definitions, we can play with impressions of what life is. But any ultimate sense that we can really define existence in any way at all falls away. And so we're simply left with a totally mysterious event and questions as to whether there's another reality, or is this reality, or whatever, all of that falls away. The questions just become totally meaningless. Questions only exist. Questions about what reality is. They only exist if we have the impression that it's possible to give an answer to that question. From a non-dual perspective, it becomes obvious that there's no possible way to respond to that question. Why? Because our fundamental sense of existence is both the impression that life has form and then an even more fundamental sense that every one of those forms is changing, even if we do go on seeing form. So what we're left with is this fundamental contradiction. It's both form and not form, or it's form and a more fundamental sense that it's not form. And so we're simply left puzzled. There's no way to resolve that contradiction. And on top of that, any of the words we have to explain anything, they fundamentally have no meaning. They're just sound. They only take on meaning by pointing to an apparent form and comparing form, one form to another form, in order to get some sense of what a form actually is, as opposed to some other form. And yet, the whole time, we have a more fundamental sense that those forms aren't the actual reality to begin with. So we have a bunch of meaningless sounds pointing to a bunch of apparent forms that we fundamentally feel are not the truth anyway. So we're not left with any way of explaining existence. We're left in total puzzlement. And we're left with an event that's dancing in whatever way it will dance. It doesn't ultimately dance in the way we want it to dance. So, I have no concerns about a noumenal world, some absolute reality that exists as opposed to a phenomenal world, some appearance of form. The urge to enter the world of thought in order to explain existence, all of that's fallen away. Apparent thoughts still come and go, and I can play with those, but I'm not going to try to figure out what existence is, because I have no tool for figuring out what existence is, and nobody else has any tool for figuring out what existence is either. And that's true according to everyone's experience. So that's all that's coming up in response to that question. We'll move on to the next one. The next one reads, "Hi Daryl, compliments of the season to you, if this is applicable." And yes, it's applicable, even though I might not necessarily be celebrating the birth of Christ. This is a time of being with family and a time where, in my particular case, there's a certain appreciation of life in general. So it's a nice season for me, even though it has its ups and downs. So thank you for the compliments of the season. And this person goes on to say, "No doubt you've dealt with this kind of question before, but it's still causing some confusion. I'm probably way off track with this question, but here goes. How is this formless event seen? How is it we actually get to see the cloud? How does this moving, shifting, changing, happening apparently perceive itself through eyes and other sense organs, which in essence are also formless? Does actual perception happen through eyes, or is it more on a par with dream, in which everything, including the perceiver, is made out of the same dream stuff? Even in a dream, we have dream eyes, etc., through which the illusory dream events are seen. Are the sense organs and the mind themselves part of the illusion, or does perception take place through eyes, ears, etc.?" So actually, this person who's written in has unknowingly answered his own question. One of the lines reads, how does this moving, shifting, changing, happening apparently perceive itself through eyes and other sense organs, which in essence are also formless? And that's the answer to the question. The question itself answers itself because it's pointing out that this moving, shifting, dancing event of this moment, the moving, shifting, dancing event of life, only apparently perceives itself through eyes and other sense organs, which are in essence also formless. So once again, we have these questions about existence, and once we start to acknowledge that our most fundamental sense of existence is that it's moving and shifting and changing. So it doesn't matter whether we're the baker on some corner in some city in the world, or we're a warehouse worker or whatever in the daily run of life, or we're some world-renowned physicist. Fundamentally, we have the sense that everything in life is changing. As we apparently live life through a number of years, everyone will eventually come to say that everything is changing. We know that our thoughts and our moods are changing from moment to moment. I mean, we spend lifetimes trying to control them. Some people go on three-month retreats trying to hold their thoughts still or hold their thoughts away. And it never amounts to anything. They might have certain moments of stillness, or they want to have one particular realization that never moves and shifts and changes. They want to have one moment of clarity that never leaves or never alters itself in any way. And it doesn't happen. Even if we have this impression that everything in life is changing, that will deepen so that it is never the same from moment to moment. And even as we are initially having this acknowledgement arise, we may in one moment be absolutely certain that everything in life is changing, and in the next moment we'll be very much attached to form and trying to figure life out in terms of form, the description of form. So from this non-dual perspective, let's just set aside any considerations of reality or dream states, and let's just acknowledge what our basic experience is. So, do you have the impression that your body is not changing? Do you have the impression that your thoughts are not changing in this moment, or that your mood is not changing in this moment? Do you have the impression that the seasons don't change, or that the surface of the planet doesn't change? I mean, those people who live in certain parts of the world where there are earthquakes, they certainly don't have the impression that the surface of the earth doesn't change. Do you have the impression that the earth is not growing older? Do you have the impression that the galaxy is not shifting in some way? Do you have the impression that planets aren't turning? Do you have the impression that molecules and atoms aren't changing? Because if you ask a scientist who really has a very profound sense of those supposed molecules and atoms, they will tell you that it's incorrect to think of those apparent particles as things, as forms. They are more like little nebulous clouds that have no that have no particular form. So what is your impression of existence? Is existence a waking state? Because wait a little while. It's going to seem like it's a sleeping state. Is it a sleeping state? Well, wait a little while. It's going to seem like it's a dreaming state. Is it a dreaming state? Well, wait a little while. It's going to seem like it's a waking state again. So what is it exactly? Is it something in particular? Or is it a moving, shifting, dancing, formless happening, an eventing? You were a quarter of an inch long in your mother's womb at one point. Then you were 6 inches long, then a foot long. Outside of the womb, you were 2 feet tall, 3 feet tall, 4 feet tall. Right now, you are as tall as you are. At some point, that's going to start shrinking. Eventually, you will become food for the creatures of the earth. Which is the real you? Is it the you that was a quarter inch long, or a foot long, or 3 feet tall? Or is it the you that seemed to be 2 years old, or 4 years old, or 10 years old? I mean, what's the real you? Which one is the real you? Or are you the event that's always presenting itself in a different appearance? This eventing, this happening, this moving, shifting, formless dance of this moment, the warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, vibrating, pulsing, twinging, paining, shifting event, the Great Spirit, the unformed ocean moving and shifting, looking inside, we find a moving, shifting, dancing event. Looking outside, we find a much larger moving, shifting, dancing event. Formless dancing inside, formless dancing outside. It's just formless dancing. What is your actual impression of existence? Now, everyone I've ever discussed this with eventually tells me that, yes, their impression is that life is a formless dancing event. However, apparently day to day, we consider life in terms of form. We see apparent forms, and we give those forms labels. And the labeling of those forms eventually give rise to a storyline about a me that's separate from the rest of existence, a me that has an eye, an ear, a mouth, a nose, a tongue, a body, and that with those sense instruments, I'm something that can experience an outside world, a world of separate forms. Now, even though those storylines seem to be somewhat functional, according to our most basic experience of life, those storylines can't be the truth. The appearance of form can't really be the truth, because our fundamental sense of life is that these forms are changing from moment to moment. Even if they change very slowly and in subtle ways, all of these forms are changing. So it doesn't matter if it's a thought or a mountain. We have the impression that those forms are changing. So the appearance of form can't be the ultimate truth. But we can't see any other truth, because the world appears to have form. So ultimate truth then becomes simply this event that can't be explained. And since it can't be explained, we can't be using terms like ultimate truth. If there is only this mysterious happening, why would we even be dealing with what's real and what's a dream? There's just a totally inexplicable happening. And so the questions eventually fall away, or they may eventually fall away, in the realization that these kinds of considerations make no real sense. Questions of what ultimate reality are make no real sense. Because the tool that we apparently have for understanding existence, the names and the forms, they reveal themselves to be filled with contradiction, and there's no way to resolve the contradiction. So we're left with the realization that there's just this event. There's no way of saying what it is. It's simply doing what it does. In this totally inexplicable happening of existence, there are apparent people apparently viewing an external world, apparently functioning in a way in which they influence other forms. The form of a person apparently influences other forms, and that apparent form of a person influences other forms through an apparent consciousness. And an apparent experiencing of life, an apparent understanding of life, and an apparent action based on that experience and understanding. And yet, if we acknowledge that these apparent forms can't really be what existence is, because there is a more fundamental impression that all of these forms are moving and shifting and changing in each moment all on their own. There is no specific form existing. And that the labels we have for these forms are simply meaningless sounds. Then we have this appearance of people and various objects. But fundamentally, there's no belief in that storyline or that appearance. Fundamentally, there's simply the sense that, yes, there's a happening of this moment. I can't deny that I have the impression. I can't deny that there is the impression that something is happening in this moment. And yet, there's no way of saying what that actually is. There are all kinds of apparent storylines that are coming up to say what this is. But from a non-dual perspective, there's no longer any fundamental belief in those storylines, because the storylines themselves are simply a movement, a dance, happening all on their own. They're just some mysterious event presenting itself. So I don't know if that clarifies any of the points brought up in this particular question, but that's all that's arising in this moment. At this point, I would like to clarify a certain aspect of what it is I've been presenting. Someone recently told me that in my presentation, I still seem to be offering people the hope of coming to a particular way of looking at life. And I would like to state very clearly that I'm not. I'm not offering anybody anything in this perspective. So, you know, in this consideration of what is going on in our daily lives, in this acknowledgement that everything in life is changing, and so, you know, the appearance of form can't really be what is actually happening here. And an examination of the fact that the labels we have for all of the apparent forms are just meaningless sound, that they fundamentally have no meaning. They take on meaning when they are attached to the appearance of form. And our whole sense of what something is, it doesn't come from any profound knowledge of what life is. We think we know what a wall is because we compare it to another form, like what we would call a human body. And we start noting the differences between those forms. We say, well, this is a wall and not a body because it's not soft. The wall is hard. The wall doesn't seem to move around. The body does seem to move around. And so this is what we call knowledge. There is this impression that one form is not another form. And yet, none of this gives any true explanation of what the event of life actually is. When this event of life first presents itself, apparently first presents itself, there is no storyline. There isn't any baby that comes out of the womb with any storyline. There isn't even a baby coming out of the womb that has the impression there's a baby coming out of the womb. It'll take years to be indoctrinated, to be taught those storylines, to be able to put together a story that, oh yes, I was a baby that came out of the womb. For any apparent baby coming out of the womb, it's only a baby coming out of the womb for the adults watching it happen. For the baby, there isn't any baby coming out of the womb. There's simply a mysterious event. The baby isn't even calling it a mysterious event. It takes years to get indoctrinated enough to call life a mysterious event. Within a non-dual sensibility, there isn't any urge to fundamentally call it anything at all. There isn't any question of what reality is, because it becomes obvious that there's no way to respond to that question. I mean, fundamentally, what the heck is a reality? Reality is just a meaningless sound. Now, in a consideration of all of these things, some apparent people get the impression that I'm leading them to some kind of promised land, that if they could just see life in this way, they wouldn't have to suffer. They wouldn't have to feel pain. They wouldn't have to feel confusion. They wouldn't have to be feeling that they're overwhelmed by life in certain situations. They wouldn't have to judge themselves as being inadequate in certain ways. That they wouldn't have to suffer their arrogance when they think they're so much better than someone else. So certain apparent people get the impression that if they can just understand life in the way that I'm presenting it, if they could understand what this non-dual perspective is, then all of these so-called terrible things would fall away, and there would be only the golden, glowing, clear, enlightened, self-realized Buddha sitting here. A self-realized, awakened being that never experiences any difficulty. And there isn't any. Let me be very clear about this. There isn't any spiritual teaching anywhere that is offering you that. However, it may occur that with this apparent non-dual perspective, no matter what happens in life, whether it's difficult or easy, whether it's joyful or sad, whether it's confused or clear, whether it appears to be any of these things in any particular moment, there may be a fundamental sense that that's okay. We have poets like Khalil Gibran, the prophet, saying that if you really do awaken to life's holy face, to the fact that life is this divine event, this divinely mysterious event simply presenting itself, that there aren't any human beings in charge of that, that even the notion of human beings is some kind of fantasy, that there is a totally inexplicable happening simply presenting itself in whatever way it presents itself, that if we awaken to life's holy face, then perhaps we will accept the seasons of our heart the way we accept the seasons that pass over our fields. So in the same way that we will accept the changes in nature, the movement from a storm to calm, or from calm to a storm, or the movement from summer to the bleakness of winter, and from the bleakness of winter to the lushness of summer, in the same way that we've grown to simply accept that as being a fact of life, then perhaps we will open up to the seasons of our heart, the moments of joy, the moments of sorrow, the moments of clarity, the moments of confusion, the moments of confidence, the moments of despair, the moments of arrogance, the moments of humbleness, the moments of kindness, and the moments of cruelty. Perhaps we will come to feel that that's not such a terrible dance, because like the movement of all the other seasons, it's simply life presenting itself in the way that it presents itself, that it's not a personal dance. It's a great, mysterious, unformed, inexplicable event or happening. If you want to call it a presence, a formless presence, that's fine. These are just words. Words ultimately are unimportant. Within this non-dual realm, they simply point or indicate a happening that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. So these teachings, they're not promising you a better life. They're simply offering the perspective that this isn't all about us. We're not the center of the universe. That our little storylines are not telling us what's actually going on here. Yes, the apparent storylines still apparently come and go. The apparent confusions still come and go. The apparent moments of clarity still come and go. The apparent moments of joy and sorrow still come and go. But the event, the unformed event that existence is, it's always here, unformed. We can't even say that it's being anything in particular. It has no particular form. So at best, this may be offering a profound resting, because the whole notion that we're something separate from the event, doing the event, causing the event in any way, that's a fantasy. And if we rest as the event, it may be realized that everything will occur all on its own. The particular needs that we will be given or that we are will arise on their own. The particular interests that we are will arise on their own. The particular urges that we are will arise on their own. The urges that are strong enough to move into what we call action, that will happen all on its own. We do not cause anything that we apparently are, therefore we do not cause anything else. There is simply a totally mysterious event presenting itself, so that even in the confusion, it may be seen that it's not really confusion. It's a totally mysterious event presenting itself. Even in the moments of kindness, it's not really something called kindness. Who knows what it is? It's a totally mysterious event doing what it does. In the moments of joy, it's not really joy. In the moments of sorrow, it's not really sorrow. This teaching, this particular perspective that's being offered in this moment, is not really a perspective that's being offered in this moment. This is simply a totally mysterious event compellingly presenting itself. I can't do anything else in this moment. If you have an interest in this perspective and you're listening to this apparent perspective, you can't do anything else in this moment. This is what you're compelled to be. And whatever it seems to be in this moment is moving on to something else. So where's the freedom? Where is the peace in any of this? The freedom and the peace that's offered in this apparent perspective is offered in a lot of different perspectives. I just saw a movie recently, a small production called Leaves of Grass, and it was, for all intents and purposes, it was simply a dark comedy about, they have one particular actor, Edward Norton, playing twin brothers. One brother is a university professor who teaches classical philosophy, and the other brother is a pot-growing, pot-smoking hillbilly from Oklahoma. They're both much more intelligent, apparently, than the average person. However, one has chosen to find happiness and peace through reason, through the intellect. And he's moved to all of the classical philosophies that said, use your reason and your intellect to dampen your passions, to find some balance. And the other, the pot-smoking hillbilly, has indulged all of his passions. And in the course of the movie, even though at times it just seems to be a silly comedy, basically it's pointing out that neither one of those perspectives is what life is. And ultimately, in the story of the movie, the professor explains throughout the movie how, as a child, he was very frightened of summer storms, and he would go and hide under the bed whenever a storm appeared, and his mother would warn him when a storm was coming so that he could go hide in the closet or hide under the bed. And he said as soon as he was able to, he ran to the library to understand a storm, to see what it was all about, to understand it so that he would never have to be frightened again. And ultimately in the movie, someone asks him what he discovered in that whole process. And what he says is, I discovered that they still happen. So at the end of the movie, there's a summer storm. And what he says is, you know, it's starting to rain. The rain, he's sitting out on a chair on the front lawn. And the rain is starting to fall on him. The summer storm is coming. And he says, I think I'm just going to sit out here for a while. Because he's come to realize that that's life. It doesn't matter how much you try to understand it. It doesn't matter how much you try to indulge your pleasures. Life has storms. And so at the end of the movie, he's learned to simply rest in the midst of a storm. Now, I'm not even saying you're going to get the ability to rest. I'm simply pointing out that all of us experience this very simple fact that life is a moving, shifting event. We are a moving, shifting event. It has no particular form, and try as we might to control it ultimately, we can't. And more than that, even if we make no attempt to do anything, it's going to play out anyway. We will be compelled to follow our needs, our interests, our concerns, our urges, because we don't exist as anything other than that movement. And all of that is a divinely mysterious event. Now, I don't know how you're going to respond to that fact. I don't even know if you're interested in that fact. I'm simply pointing to the fact. I don't even know why I point to the fact. It's just part of the event. I don't even know why people are interested in me pointing to the event. All of that is simply the event doing what it does. In a way, we could say that we're all being given a life. None of us are being given a life that will be only a golden glowing event. We're being given a life that apparently is up and down. It's joy and sorrow, it's clarity and confusion. It's confidence and anxiety. It's nights of deep sleep, and it's nights of restless tossing and turning. So that, from this perspective, in some apparent cases, it seems as though, in acknowledging that, even in the midst of the confusion and the sorrow and the anxiety, those moments where life is confusion and sorrow and anxiety, and in some cases real despair, there is an ultimate feeling, or no, I don't want to use the word ultimate. Don't hang on to that. Don't grab onto that. there may be the impression or the feeling that life's still okay, that it's a great, mysterious, and in some way, miraculous dance, even though it might not be pleasant at times. But there is no ultimate anything to be described. There's no ultimate anything to be hung on to. The most ordinary, irritating event or moment of your life is the divine expression. You're not making it happen, and you're not going to stop it ultimately from happening. It may seem as though you're allowed to prevent certain things, but we all know that we ultimately do not have control over existence. And so this appearance of being able to prevent certain things, that is only an appearance, and we are able to do that only because the larger event of existence allows us to do that. So if you went to any of the great non-dual masters like Ramana Maharshi and asked him, "What am I supposed to do?" He would say, "Just be what you are." And in that, no effort is required. In this moment, you're compelled to do and to be certain things, certain apparent things. And whatever it seems to do and be in this moment is on its way to some other appearance. It's an automatic flowing, an automatic dance. As always, this is only for your consideration. I'm not asking you to believe it. I'm simply saying, or simply asking you to consider, if your experience of life is that everything is changing, and that includes you, then doesn't that mean existence is a formless, ultimately, a formless event? And if we acknowledge that we're not making any of it happen, if we sit down and we do absolutely nothing in this moment and we discover that everything we are goes on happening, everything that life is goes on happening, and we discover that we won't be able to sit here forever, we will get up and go to the toilet, we will get up and leave the room, we will go and get something to eat, we will hang out with friends, we will work if we need to find food, or if we need to get money for food. If we sit down and make no effort and yet discover that we will be compelled to go and do these things, then we may come to realize that there is simply this compulsive expression of existence, this inexplicable, indefinable, unformed dance. And in that, we may find a resting. There may be an impression of a deep sense of rest. Or not. So, that's it for this month. Remember, it doesn't matter how much we clench our teeth, hunch our shoulders, tighten our stomachs, the storms are still going to happen. Bye.